Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Okay, ladies, today's discussion, I read a little bit of something this week on the topic of trust. And I thought, oh, brilliant, brilliant, because a lot of family members really struggle with this concept of when do I trust? How do I trust? What am I going to, you know, where do I go with this? And it can bring on a whole bunch of different complications. And in this particular piece that I read, they talked about how trust and hope are often confused. Expectations and acceptance are often confused. And when we kind of confuse all of these different things and we don't quite understand exactly what that those things are, we can get them all messed up and end up making not so great decisions or not understanding how it all works together. So why don't we first talk about, like, what are the definitions? Like, what is the difference between trusting and hoping and expectations and acceptance? Any ideas? Kayla, you're usually good for like definitions.
I know. And it's funny because I realized I had to look trust up because I actually don't know what the definition is. So I just looked it up. So basically it's a firm belief in the reliability, interesting word in this case, truth, ability or strength of somebody or something. So it's basically this belief that the person's going to be reliable, truthful, able, or powerful enough to come through with what they say they're going to do or what they promise to. Okay, so I think trust, given that definition, needs to be erased out of the possibility because that is not going to work. So now we have hope. I think hope is this kind of like more expansive desire to have something good play out. Like you really want something good to play out, but it's not based on this is what's going to happen. It's more loose. It's more open. It's a possibility versus an expectation, which brings us to the next word, which is expectation, which is more like a locked in belief that that which you think is going to happen is going to happen. But it's like really specific. Like I'm expecting that this person's going to come home at 2 o'clock. I'm expecting that they're going to do what they said that they did. So it's like this real kind of locking into what the outcome is going to be. It's a very tied in, locked in. And then you mentioned the word acceptance, which is this feeling of just being with what is actually going on. It's this kind of loosening and spending time with and living with what is versus what you want it to be. I don't know if those were helpful definitions, but that's how I think of it.
Awesome. The great definitions. And that really leads into how like trust and hope often are linked together. And then expectations and acceptance are often linked together and how trust then becomes all warped. So let's just kind of talk about this. Like, what is the difference between trust and hope and how family members can often kind of get discombobulated with this? So trust is you want to trust in your loved one that they're going to do something trustworthy, right? So for example, they ask you for money and then you give them money and you're trusting in the fact that they're not going to take that money and spend it on drugs. You think you're trusting them, but actually that's more hope. I hope. You hope that they are trustworthy enough that they're not going to spend that money on drugs and that they're going to spend it on what they say they're going to spend it on. You don't know. Trust has more to do with the other person and not you putting hope in the person that they would spend the money the way they say they're spending it.
So trust is really the value and the condition of the other person. Is that person trustworthy? And hope is your hope that you can trust this person doing X, Y.
It's more like a desire.
Yeah.
But I do think, so I think this is a really good way to look at it. So there's your experience and then what you're putting on the other person. And hope is looser. So it's your experience of wanting something. And the trust is this, it has to come from the other person. It's like, it's, and you know, just so you know, my fundamental belief about trust is that words are inessential to this process. Like what somebody says is meaningless. I feel like this about everybody. It's certainly more pronounced if somebody is using drugs or alcohol, but I believe that, you know, trust is really demonstrated by their behavior, by the other person's behavior. It's earned, basically.
Right. The other thing about this is nobody is trustworthy with everything. It's impossible. I know there are things that I'm probably not trustworthy with. So the problem with this trust and hope is the expectation piece of it. Right? Because now you expect the person to be trustworthy and you expect them to do what they say they're going to do with the money. So now you have this expectation and then they don't follow through on it. Now what?
Well, and there goes your hope. Dr. John Fitzgerald, the psychologist we work with, answered a question from one of our members one time about trust. And he said, how about taking it in pieces? I trust him or her to do what they're going to say when they go work on the car, or when they go, you know, when they say they've been in school, I can trust they've been in school. I cannot trust this person when they talk about just, I need to go out for an hour, I'll be back. That for me sends all kinds of trust issues right out the window. So it depends which domain we're talking about. You can trust your loved one, you can love your loved one in pieces. You know, the trust comes in pieces, and there are some areas where there's been so much damage over so many years. 100% trust in every domain, unlikely, but nobody lives with 100% trust in anybody in every domain, except maybe your idea of a higher power. Humans are flawed and they'll make mistakes. And this business of it being unconditional, 100% trust, I'm very leery of it. And I think looking at it in parts helps me to love somebody and conditionally trust them.
I'm not fond of focusing on trust. I'm really not, because I feel like it's a setup. You know, it's kind of like I was having this conversation with the family last week, and they were saying something about, you know, well, he said he was going to spend it on this or do this or whatever. And I was like, why are you focusing on that? When somebody says anything to me, and especially in this world of substance use, I don't listen to it. The words mean nothing to me. You know, I feel like people say things for various reasons, and there's a few things, and I think this is an important point. Why do people lie to us who are using? One is that they want to protect us, which is huge. That's their caring behavior, ironically enough. You know, they want to tell you what you want to hear. They want to comfort you. They want you not to worry about them. They don't want to feel like they're stressing you out, so they lie, which ironically has the complete opposite effect. Then there's the they want to believe that they can do this thing. They really want to do what they said they're going to do. They really have a desire to change, but it's not so simple. It's not that easy to accomplish that. So it's a setup for them. And then the other thing about trust is that anything can happen at any moment. So, you know, it used to be like when I was working in the methadone program, people would say to me, you know, I had a client that said, when I left the house, I had my money and I was going to go buy my daughter a dress, but I wound up getting high. So his intention was really good, but then he wound up using it because whatever the trigger of the environment was, or the trigger of his feelings or the moment, actually led to him using. So I feel like this is that trust is a setup for failure. Trust is a setup for disappointment.
Oh, I love it. I love what you just said, because that's it. If you are setting it up this way, and I really want to dig into this, if you're setting it up this way, where you now have hope that they are trustworthy and you expect them to do something, you are setting everybody up for disappointment, resentment, right? Because just like what Dominique said, there is your expectation and then they don't follow through with it. So your hope goes out the window. You're incredibly disappointed. And to be honest with you, I also think once the loved ones found out, they're disappointed in themselves too, and yes, they realize they're not. And so it's like this spiraling out. But there's another added piece in here that we've really got to talk about, because I too had someone this week talk to me about a situation where their loved one called and wanted money. They had given them money that they're in recovery, and they had called the day before. They needed money for something. They were out with their sponsor or whatever, and they needed money for lunch. And then the next day they called home again for money, and mom got shaky on this. Now she started getting funny, fuzzy feelings in her stomach. But if you listen to her talk, she said, "I want him to know that I trust him." So mom is trying to set up opportunities for him to show her that he's trustworthy, but she is also trying to send the message that she trusts him, because she's afraid if she doesn't send this message that it's just going to make things worse. So hear me out on this. What I said to this mom was, don't trust him. Don't. Why would you trust him? Absolutely not. Don't trust him. Don't trust the illness. Why would you think after years of using that he goes into recovery for a couple of months that he's trustworthy? He's not. And the illness, it's not trustworthy. And it's not that he's a bad person. It's that he's trying to figure out life and he's just not quite there yet, right? So no, don't trust him. But the other thing is, which this article pointed out, is that they said, look at trust as an account in a bank. And everybody has their own trust account, and only they can deposit and withdraw from the trust account. And mom can't deposit trust into the son's trust account. That actually the onus is not on mom to show him that she trusts him. The onus is on the loved one to make some deposits in the trust account and show mom that he's trustworthy. And this comes to the acceptance piece, right? If you can accept that right now he's just not trustworthy, he's going to have to engage in some trusting behavior, like make sure he's spending that money on what he says he's spending the money on. Then he's made deposits in his trust account, and that's the way to repair. It's not mom's responsibility to show him that she trusts him. And if you're doing that, then you're setting yourself up for a huge disappointment. Maybe stop, take a look, analyze the situation. And instead of trusting someone, why don't you hold off on giving answers? Or why don't you think about it and try and understand what's going on better? So in other words, when the son calls home and says, I need money, and then it went on when she was like, oh, I don't know, I gave you money yesterday, da, da, da. And then he started pulling on the heartstrings of mom and said, oh, but it's for the big book. And I was like, well, you don't have to give that immediate answer. One, your goal is not to set him up so that he can be, to show him that you trust him. It's not that. Your goal is to just say, you know what? I'm not sure. I got to think about it. I gave you money yesterday. Maybe if you really need the big book, you could come home and we could order it online, but hold off on giving the money and give yourself the space and time to really think about what's happening here.
The big book is such a big example, such a great example, because people give you the big book in the program.
As a newcomer, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an ironic request, okay? But it's a perfect example of this. Oh, it's from my recovery, it's a big book. And, you know, I keep thinking, when you were speaking, I just had this like big vision of building something, okay? Because what you were describing, Lori, is that that person needs to build their trust up for themselves. They're building their own trust bank. So every time they do something trustworthy, there's a brick put into their housing development. And what I was thinking is, what would I say, not to be demeaning, because I don't want to take the flip side and say, you know, you asking me for money every day, it's making me nervous, whatever. It would be more like, well, you asked me for money yesterday, I'm not really comfortable giving you money every day. I'm sure you'll figure out how to get the big book you know, and I'm sure you're creative enough to figure out how to get the big book yourself. I really trust that you'll figure that out. And that's a different way of trusting, using the word trust in a sentence, because let's face it, it's like the spelling test. You know, trust in the sentence is, I trust that you'll figure it out yourself. And that to me is a very worthy use of the word trust, because that's not a setup. That's kind of where you're putting your hope into words. And so to me, it's a very powerful example of disseminating and putting the trust back, their need to create their own trust back in their hands, as opposed to you having to show you them that you trust them. I want to see if you trust yourself. I wouldn't say this, but that's what I'm thinking. It's like, build your own trust up. And so if we could think about that as a concept in our heads, that we're giving them opportunities to trust in their ability to manage situations and figure out how to stay clean if that's their job, if that's their desire, or figure out how to get the support that they need, or to do problem solving. There's all these opportunities that we provide by not overstepping and it being about us and what we think and what we want.
Yeah, and then this other very common thing I hear is, you know, I trusted him. He said he wasn't going to use. She said she wasn't going to do this, and she's done it. She let me down. The being let down here. And first of all, let's not be naive as to what we're dealing with. We're dealing with addiction. It's very hard to beat addiction. And the lying and the carrying on the protection of the people somebody loves, but also the protection of being able to use without obstacles, you know, is pretty predominant in the thinking of people with addiction. And so let's not be naive to say, use the word trust and using in the same sentence for a good long time, because otherwise you're just completely put out, upset, demoralized, everything's gone, and you've lost your trust for them. And so I just don't want to put those two words together, because it's not an issue of trust. This is an issue of them managing a disease, a condition that's going to take time, that's going to take the environment knocking them around, that's going to take process, that's going to take you creating the best renewal and recovery environment that you can for them to the degree you can. And they are going to fall down. They are going to fall down. You're not the one whose trust has been misplaced.
I love what you're saying, because that's it in a nutshell, what you're saying. And also, in what I read, it talks about how one of the things you shouldn't do is expect your loved one to be 100%, 100% of the time. It's not possible, first off. And second off, just like what you're talking about, they're trying to manage an extremely complicated, complex illness. How could someone possibly be perfect in their recovery? And you becoming disappointed in that is actually, you set up your own expectations of how things would go. And you're actually, if you take a look at it, it's the expectations and your own thoughts that are deceiving you and giving you a hard time. I love this idea of, remember, you can't make deposits in your loved one's trust account. So you may be trying to show your loved one that you trust them, but that doesn't add up in their account. It doesn't. And this is where the word acceptance comes from, I think, in this particular situation, is to accept that this is the situation. Your loved one is either active or they're in recovery. And right now, they probably don't trust themselves with a lot of things, right? If you sit down and talk to them, you may find that they're very open about, you give me cash, it's a trigger for me. And then 20 minutes later, they're trying to convince you to give them cash, but they're basically saying, cash is a trigger for me and I don't trust myself around cash. So it's acceptance. Accept that this is where your loved one is, that you probably can't trust everything. But it's not against you. It's not to be taken personally. It's just like what Dominique said. It's the individual is trying to manage an illness. They're trying to walk through life. They're trying to figure this whole thing out. And yeah, they're probably not going to be trustworthy for a while. And they have a lot of deposits that they need to put into this bankrupt account.
Well, I think the word bankrupt is really important here, because what we're looking at, it's really important to like kind of get the bird's eye view of this. By the time we're working with our family members and engaging with them, and there's all this kind of debris and damage, it's one thing to live your life and deal with the day-to-day hardships that we all deal with. Like, you know, people get sick, or you lose a job, or you're struggling financially. Like, there's all these things day-to-day that just in a normal life that people have to deal with. And that was a very short list. There's many, many things on that list. But if you look at somebody who's been in the throes of this illness, it's like you're in this bombed out place, and they're having to like create a life out of this. Even if they say, okay, I'm done, I want to do something differently, they're having to create a life out of the rubble and look at the old things that they've done that don't work, and deal with the guilt and the shame, and look at the people in their lives and the triggers, and not having a really good set of positive behaviors that they could fall back on, like some of us hopefully have. They don't have that set to work with. And so to trust them is such an incredible setup. It's more about, you know, what you're talking about, Lori, of this acceptance of like, wow, there's like nothing there. They don't have much to work with. This is the microscopic positivity that we're working at. When they do tiny little positive things, and we acknowledge it and reward them for it and notice it, that's the rebuilding of their lives. It's not about trust. It's about acknowledgement of what they're doing right. That's where you want your focus, not on whether you trust them or not. You're going to focus on the things that they are doing, that are working, that they're initiating, that they're following up on. And that's the power here. It's not about you're going to have this magical ability to love them and trust them through this. The love is essential, but it's not about doing something. It's merely creating an environment of belief in them without it being a pressured belief, because the pressured belief is an absolute setup for failure.
I think about all of this actually like mothering a toddler. I know this is going to sound crazy, but
similar.
Right. It is. It's very similar. If I have a toddler that's just learned to walk and they're hanging out over a cliff, and the toddler turns to me and smiles and says, "Trust me, I won't go off the cliff." Do I trust the toddler? Do I not love the toddler? No, I still love my toddler, right? Do I trust that they will not walk off the cliff? No, I don't. I don't trust that. I accept it. This is the same thing. I accept the fact that my loved one is going to stumble through this, that right now they're probably not trustworthy of particular things, but I also am understanding that they're the ones that have to start putting little deposits into their bank account. And that's how trust gets built back up. And it may take a long time. It may take years before trust is built. And we see it all the time, because I just think of how many spouses or partner relationships where the spouse, and it's true of parents too, family members, where the pocketbook does not get left out, right? No way is that pocketbook being left out, to the point where it's actually traumatizing. And then your loved one goes into recovery. It's hard to start leaving that pocketbook back out if your credit cards were always missing, if money was always taken, if the pocketbook itself goes missing for days on end. It's hard to trust to leave that pocketbook out. And oftentimes I hear from family members, it takes oftentimes years, and that actually, that's an indication that their loved one is getting to a better spot where they can be a little bit more trusting, when they can leave their pocketbook or certain things out and know that it's not going to get swiped or go missing. Just think about this deeply. And I just want family members to know that, yes, you can create situations for your loved one where they can show you that they are trustworthy, but it isn't your job to deposit trust into their bank account. it's actually your job to step back and let them work on it themselves. And it's your job to make decisions based on your needs. If you don't want to give that money for the big book, or you're not prepared to do that, you don't do it. You just say, yeah, no, not comfortable with it. It's not a matter of being angry and upset and, oh, I don't trust you, or that. It's not that. It's just calmly, yeah, no, uncomfortable with that. And we can talk about it when you get home. And that's it.
And we do a lot in our groups and also in the e-learning modules about addressing, you know, why this mom would want to give money as a way to earn his trust. You know, this, all of these hard reasons why we give the money, from, you know, if he doesn't get the money, he won't do A or B, all of these justifications, some of them really life and death. Well, if he doesn't have this money, then he'll just go out and prostitute himself. And, you know, I don't want that on my conscience either. So I give him the money. Just know that that's a whole topic, a whole separate topic about how to say no and the difficulties of saying no. But the idea is to say no, not around my boundary. My boundary says, no, I can't do that for you. That's yours.
All right, so I'm going to summarize. It seems I have this little chart in my head based on this discussion, thank you very much, that there's what our part is and what the other person's part is. So our part is to be able to have hope. That's internal. It's our thing. Hope does not cause any damage to anybody. It's loose. It's open. It allows, you know, you to just kind of stay positive, even if things are terrible. You're not attaching it to anything. It's much more vague. I hope that things are good. Nothing bad is going to happen with that. And then we have the other thing that we get to do is accept. Accept sometimes even what's unacceptable, but we're not going to tie it up into this horrible negative knot. It's more like, this is what it is. I work on soothing myself with it, and I figure out how to live with it. And then the things that are not ours to hold on to are trust. That's the other person's job, to build it up into them for themselves and to become trustworthy for themselves, which we all will feel once it starts happening. So that we'll know it's happening once they have enough equity in their account. And the other thing is, expectations need to be theirs. They're the ones that need to have expectations. They're the ones that need to look at what they want and how to make it happen and what they expect from themselves. If we have expectations, we're setting ourselves up and the other person up for failure and disappointment. Not a good tool.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.